Hey, this is Larry H. Russell here, featured columnist at CLNS Radio and executive producer of the number one Boston Celtics podcast on the web, Celtics Beat. And now, author. That's right, author. My debut book, Fall of the Boston Celtics, How Bad Luck, Bad Decisions Brought the Mighty Celtics Empire to Its Knees and Ushered in the Dark Ages, has already been called the definitive account of the infamous doldrum period in Celtics history. You think the Celtics are struggling now? Well, you got quite a short memory. Get the inside story from executives, general managers, staffs, players, media, fans, you name it, as I take you through a time in which how the Boston Celtics fell from the shining city on the hill and became entrenched in purgatory. And you'll see why. That's Fall of the Boston Celtics, available on clnsradio.com on January 5th. And you can't wait for the release? Well, tweet the hashtag Fall of the Boston Celtics to me, at CLNS_LHR. That's hashtag Follow the Boston Celtics at CLNS_LHR. And we'll pick one lucky follower and hand out a free copy on the January 4th episode of Celtics Beat. And now, on to your regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah, that sounds good. You want to hear it again? It's been a while. Why not? All right, that's enough. Plenty of time for that later. Ladies and gentlemen, come in. It's Careless Whispers on CLNS Radio. And if you haven't gotten it yet, go get the book that has the longest book heard in my Calvin Chamberlain. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a while.
Yeah. I'm good. So, are we getting a cut of this LHR book? So, is that happening?
I have no idea what's happening with that. I wonder how many copies he sold. It was released yesterday.
That is a great question. Well, yeah, I would, you know, I'd like to know, because he is one of the foremost experts on the Boston Celtics.
That is correct. He is one of the foremost experts on the Boston Celtics. If you want to give us a call tonight, I'm Matt Rury, by the way, 347-215-7771. We haven't been on the air in a few weeks for various reasons, mostly driven by me. And here we are. We're back. Some post-game, yep. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Although I guess I should – we're here at Team Green Truth. Maybe Sam in San Diego will see it and give us a call because he's been reaching out to us through various means, and we'd love to hear from him. So hopefully that'll happen, Calvin. But let's get back to our roots. We're going to start with a Celtics topic. Oh, wait. This is not a Celtics topic anymore. This is a Mavs topic. Yeah, that's right. We haven't spoken to each other on the air since Rajon Rondo was traded, and well, I guess I should rephrase that. Since he's gotten a few games under his belt, we have not spoken on the air since it's been a few weeks there. So where do you want to start with this? It's not a Celtics topic, but it is Rondo. We are going to start with him. He's by all accounts, he's making Dallas's defense better. And I haven't really watched enough of the games to know whether that's true. And I certainly can't compare it to what they've done earlier in the season because I didn't see any of those games. Even though I do enjoy the roster that they have, I think they're going to be a lot of fun down the stretch. And I will tune in to check them out, not just because of Rondo, but I like some of their other pieces as we sort of illustrated at the beginning of the season on one of our shows. But do you buy into this notion that Dallas is... Yeah. Do you buy into this notion that Dallas is better on defense now, at least?
I would say the sample size is a little small, a little early to tell. Yeah, I'm looking at, you know, what they've done since they've traded for Rondo. And certainly, you know, they beat, you know, Brooklyn and Cleveland without LeBron James. That'll help your, you know, they held those two teams to 88 and 90 points, so that'll help your defensive rating. They smashed Washington, so credit to them there. They beat OKC, but they gave up a lot of points in doing so. They beat the Lakers without Kobe, which will also help your defensive rating. And they gave up a lot of points to Phoenix and Atlanta. So, you know, make of that what you will. I think that it's a little bit too small of a sample size, and considering the teams that they held down, other than Washington, which is an impressive defensive effort, I might argue that the rest of their wins, at least in terms of, you know, giving up fewer points, is less impressive than you might think.
So the points are down, or the points given up are down, and
right.
I guess the offense is pretty similar. But I don't know if you can really attribute. I don't know if you can really attribute that to. It's not similar.
Well, no. I'm just saying it's only been 9 games, and you know,
right.
They played a lot of bad offenses in that 9 game stretch. So I don't know. I don't know how much of this 5-point improvement is actually Rondo.
You can't. That's what I was going to say. You can't attribute it just to Rondo. If anything, he makes the team a little bit better on defense. Sure, that argument can be made, but. The 5-point swing is definitely not him.
Well, he's better than Jameer Nelson on defense. You know,
yes.
Even at his worst, right?
Certainly.
Like even at his least defense playing, whatever you want to say about Rondo not trying, he's still going to be significantly better than Jameer Nelson with his slow feet and, you know, his small size. So, Rashawn Rondo's got long arms and he gets steals. That already helps you a lot more than Nelson's going to. So I think that just helps the defense right there. And then, you know, Tevin Harris, I guess he's probably still getting comparable minutes. But I think what's more interesting to me about whether or not the defense has been better, and I think the reason why it's even been a focus, I don't know if we'd even, you know that the defense was better or hear about the stat this early, if Rondo didn't come out the other day and admit that he hadn't been playing defense in Boston the last few years. He said that he had Avery Bradley. He credited Avery Bradley as the young buck to sort of cover for him defensively, and he didn't feel like he needed to play defense. But in Dallas, they expect you to play defense every night, and you can get embarrassed by another team's point guard in the West pretty quickly if you don't play defense in Dallas.
I would attribute that comment more to the fact that the point guards in the West are better than Dallas versus Boston type of thing. And I think in Rondo's mind, he was probably pay a compliment to Avery Bradley, but it definitely didn't come off that way. And a lot of people are looking at those comments as him not trying. And I'm one of them. And the way he played it when he came back the other night, Calvin, it just feeds my bitterness towards just his attitude when he was here for the last couple of years.
Well, it's interesting that's why this is the main reason why I wanted to talk about Rondo, because I'm fascinated by him and by, like, you know, wondering, I guess I've been wondering how Celtics fans should feel about this guy. So on the one hand, yeah, he comes out and he says, like, oh, I haven't been playing defense these last few years, and he comes out and you know, he helps Dallas's defense, so that on the one hand feeds the argument that the Rondo lovers have been saying, like, oh, this guy's just on a bad team, and like he still has it defensively, and he just hasn't, you know, been, he just hasn't had the need to do it on this team, and we should have held on to him. But on the other hand, it also says the opposite, that he's a guy who doesn't always try hard, and that clearly he wasn't giving his all, or at least it implies that. You sort of let him off the hook a little bit by saying you feel like he was misinterpreted a little bit, and that's fine, but it's still not a comment that reflects very well on Rashawn Rondo's character.
Certainly not. I'm not trying to let him off the hook here at all. I think his intentions were not to take anything away from Boston or the Celtics. I think it was more he was making comments about who he was playing with and who he was playing against, not necessarily the organization or anything like that, or just not wanting to play for a team. You know what I mean? So, but it definitely comes across that way. So he needs to be a little smarter about when he's going to come out with one of these long-winded answers, I think.
Well, and then, so what do you make of, again, you look at Rondo's numbers since he was acquired by Dallas, not particularly aggressive actually he has been more aggressive, but not particularly more effective than he was in Boston, averaging two more points a game outside of the Boston game. He's averaging 10 points a game. So, yeah, in Boston he was down to 8, but in recent weeks before he got traded, he was scoring like, 4 or 6 points a game. You know, he wasn't really being aggressive at all, even though the team
part of
him to be aggressive.
I think part of that is that he's not the same player, really. And he's still excellent. There's no debating that, but I don't think he's the same as what he used to be. And if I'm going to pull up his stat line for the game after the Celtics game, because I looked at it and it was kind of pitiful. So continue while I pull that up.
It was 2 of 6. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Do you have
it? 1 of 13 against Brooklyn. That's brutal. The last two games after the Boston game. Yeah. But still, forget how many shots he landed, because, like I said, he's hitting at about the same percentage he hit in Boston. But in Boston, with a team that had fewer options, how many times did we criticize Rondo in the fourth quarter of games for not being aggressive or, you know, not taking over when he needed to take over? I'm looking at his shot chart since he's been to Dallas. This is what we're looking at. 11 shots, 15 shots, 14 shots, 17, 17, 10, 19, 6 and 13, right? But then I go back to his Boston, and then it's 12, 3, 3, 11, 3, a couple of 17s, but then it's like 6, 8.
It doesn't make much sense. It doesn't make much sense. I mean, because you would think that he should not be shooting as much in Dallas. Yeah, there are a lot of different options around there, but it seems as though he's taking the option for himself more often. And you know what? Maybe that's teams looking at Rondo and saying, you can't shoot jumpers. We're gonna make you shoot now. We're going to guard everyone else, and we're going to make you shoot. They don't have a point guard now that is a decent shooter. That's what the Celtics did. Jared Sollinger admitted as much after the game, that they were giving Rondo a shot, and he was knocking him down.
So is that what you would make of Rondo being so aggressive in that game, that Dallas game? I would honestly be confused as a Celtics fan, you know, watching that game and seeing Rondo try harder. It seemed to me, I mean, maybe you disagree.
I wasn't confused. He was definitely trying harder. He definitely had something to – so you can go two ways with this. He's either trying to stick it to the organization for not having built something better quicker, or he's trying to play well one more time for the fans. Those are the two extremes, as far as I can see.
So do you think that a lot of Celtics fans would appreciate how that he went off on them? Do you think
he went off in the first quarter. He had an excellent first quarter, and the montage for him, instead of the first time out, it was at the end of the first quarter, and he played so well, and he busted his ass so much in that first quarter that I decided to walk out on the montage where everybody else was giving him a standing ovation. So Celtics fans in general, yes, they are fine with him kicking our ass, and they appreciate all the hard work. They remember the good things. They remember the separated our elbow, and he comes back against Orlando to play, or was it Miami? They remember diving on the floor against Miami. That was the Miami game. Dwayne Wade diving on the floor against Dwayne Wade and separating his elbow and coming back to play. They remember having a pretty excellent game towards the end of the one when he tore his knee in Atlanta, and they remember just things like that, and they appreciate him for all the stuff that he's done. But I was feeling too bitter about the fact that he had this this cloud over him for the past couple of years, and he only brought it on himself. So I got some chicken fingers instead.
Right, I'm sorry. He's such an interesting figure to me because I feel like
fascinating.
I feel like for as many stories as there are about him, you know, showing toughness, showing grit, and showing fire, you know, in games like you talked about, you know, Dwayne Wade dislocating his elbow. He continued to play in that game. You know, I see the series where he's like terrorizing LeBron James as a guy, you know, giving up what 50 pounds to LeBron, still playing his heart out. But for every one of those things, I can also, you know, come up with situations where he was just apathetic, and it was obvious he didn't want to be there. Or,
a ton of them,
you know,
yeah.
So I don't know what to make of this guy.
And that's the type of thing that in my mind differentiates him and separates him from a guy like Paul Pierce and his potential from a guy like what Paul Pierce has already accomplished. Pierce was brash early on in his career. He had some winning times. They had some nice playoff runs with Jim O'Brien, Antoine Walker, that crew of players. That Celtics team was decent. So he experienced winning when he was relatively young in his career. And then years later, when the team was horrible, still, even though it was clear that they weren't going anywhere, until he got hurt the year before the championship, he still busted his ass and played as well as he could every night. And that's why people still love him, and that's why he's going to go down as one of the greatest Celtics of all time. But Rajon Rondo showing this apathetic BS is just – it's unbecoming as far as looking at a guy as a elite player, a max player, a number one player. And you know what? It might just be a product of the generation, if you will, because I feel like LeBron James is apathetic at times as well. And other guys. I mean, it's throughout the league. So you can't just point the finger at Rondo being the only one that's apathetic. It's something that happens in the league. And you kind of have to deal with it, but it just makes those guys on bad teams that are trying hard night in, night out look even better in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. And he didn't.
Brandon Bass.
So then what do you make of his impact then on the rebuild for the Celtics? Because I mean, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong. But I mean, the Celtics have since they made that Rondo trade, which, you know, all we did was come on post game shows and talk about how Rondo wasn't producing enough, and I didn't think he was, and I still don't think he didn't. But since the Rondo trade, the Celtics have basically been the worst team in the league, right? Or one of the three or four worst teams in the league.
They look really bad.
They look terrible. It's hard to even watch their games at this point. Got beat by Charlotte. So what do you?
I know
that
game was brutal. I couldn't believe. Although I did look at the line and I said this is wrong. Charlotte should be favored in this game, or at least not. It was a 5.5 point line half an hour before the game, and I was like, this is wrong. I know they didn't have Stevenson or Big Al, but it was wrong. I knew going into that game Charlotte should not have been a 6 point dog, and they ended up winning going away. So. It's very frustrating. I feel like they're back in this situation, kind of like they were last year, where people started speculating that they were tanking because there was no consistency. Now, nobody's speculating that they're tanking because there's nothing to really shoot for. But trading away Rondo and not flipping these other guys for something better, it would be a disaster. Or something that can help them in the future would be a disaster. So I'm still holding my opinion until Danny Ainge can make a move with whether it's the trade exception he got or flipping Jameer Nelson or Brandon Wright for something that will net them a bigger play in the future. This thing's still a couple of years away, I think, from Ainge making a big move that he has planned.
Yeah, so you wouldn't expect a move that spun this team in a positive direction this season.
I mean, it doesn't look like it. You can't just expect a KG Ray Allen deal to happen again. Although, if it were to happen, it would be something that just came out of nowhere, and you probably would have no idea that the player was even available, right? So,
right.
You just kind of have to wait and see. But we do have a caller, Calvin, at 347-215-7771. I mentioned him earlier because I expected him to call, and I was hoping that he would. Sam in San Diego, sir, welcome to Careless Whispers, and my, has it been a long time.
It has. It has. It's been. I've had a tough year work-wise, so, but I'm ready to get back into Celtics talk, and I did call Nick and Nick Gelso and requested you guys, so I got some questions for you guys. Yeah.
Well, hey, that's look what a call to Nick Gelso will get you here. You call Nick, and here we are live back on BTR.
Exactly. You gotta know who you gotta know who the contacts are.
That's right.
So first of all, I haven't been able to call in and talk about Rondo. I'm not happy. Obviously, I'm a big Rondo fan, and I hated to see him go. Especially for what we got. You know, I really love the player. Best point guard I've ever seen other than Dennis Johnson, you know, on the Celtics. So it was tough for me. I did want to ask, you know, with the way things are going in Cleveland and with Kevin Love, obviously not happy there. Why couldn't we just hold on and try to sign him in the off sign Rondo in the offseason and then try to sign Love like the original plan was? Why not go that route? That had to be something they had to have thought about.
I mean, it's definitely a move that could happen. I wouldn't expect Rondo to come back here.
No. I meant keep him. I meant
wouldn't you just keep him and just try to sign? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe Ainge. I feel like Danny Ainge is the type of guy that if he thinks someone is about to leave or that he is not going to be able to sign a player, he will get rid of him just almost immediately. So maybe
they did that with Perkins.
Yeah, maybe he figures that Rondo was not going to sign or that he was going to get better money elsewhere, and instead of just letting him walk, he decided to get something in return. That feels like to me, Calvin, the way that that Danny Ainge operates.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like it seemed like he moved on from Love after Minnesota wasn't interested in Boston's package. But I can see where Sam's coming from in terms of, you know, having a star and wanting to recruit somebody else. But I think Danny Ainge just didn't want to pay Rondo the max, and that's what it comes down to. Somebody's going to pay him the max in this offseason, you know, whether it's Dallas, whether it's the Lakers, unfortunately, or it's the Knicks. You know, one of those three, at least one of those teams, if not more, is going to offer him a max deal, and I don't think Danny Ainge was prepared to do that.
I have a feeling Mark Cuban is prepared to do that. Otherwise, why would you trade for this guy? You know he wants a max deal. He's been public saying he wants a max deal. So Mark Cuban, in my mind, is probably prepared to do it if he feels like Rondo has contributed in a way that it warrants that, right?
I think he'll definitely pay him a max. So bear with me. Just two more questions. The whole thing with Calvin's mentioned at least one time. I heard him say that the exception that the Celtics got from that deal was worthless. It didn't mean anything to Boston because of their cap situation. I've heard a couple of people say the opposite, including Jackie Mack. And I've been too lazy to do research on my own, so I wanted to hear an explanation from Calvin as to why it's worthless.
Well, I think their cap situation is different. But go ahead. No, wanted to say, I think it's different at this point. The cap situation is different, but go.
No, I overstated it when I called it worthless. It has value if they make a trade at this trade deadline. You know what I mean? Then they can slot because they're at the cap now. If they trade Brandon Wright or, you know, if they trade Jeff Green and they want to involve the trade exception in at this deadline, then the trade exception has value. But again, once they reach the off season, they're going to have significant money out of the cap anyway. The trade exception it only works if you're capped out already. So they could then theoretically, you know, sign a bunch of guys, but get to the point where they're over the cap and then use the trade exception again, you know, at next year. But they would have to do it, you know, in December because it lasts for a year. But it's unlikely that they're going to sign enough guys to be capped out anyway. And then at that point, the trade exception becomes irrelevant because they can sign whoever they want in the offseason anyway. The trade exception has value right now till the trade deadline, basically.
Okay, so that would make sense as to why you're hearing so much about them making moves, besides the fact that they can maybe flip the guys that they got. So,
right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Last thing. The whole thing with LeBron James, where he had that say at the end of that game recently, where he talked about how he was angry that players get so much blame when they leave, yet the franchises trading players away don't get the same kind of blame. And he mentioned that he doesn't understand that. I guess that's something that personally I've always thought that I understood to be that the game of basketball from a fan's point of view is supposed to be where, you know, our team is attempting to win a championship to show that they're a better organization than the next. And so essentially it's about the teams, and the players are part of that, but it's about whose team wins or whose franchise wins. So I always saw it as, that it's not about the player, it's about the team. So when a team makes a move and makes a trade, then they're trying to better themselves as a franchise. Whereas when the player does it, obviously it hurts your franchise. So that's why the anger would come from the fan. I don't see why LeBron doesn't get that.
I think that partially here, LeBron actually, for the first time in his life maybe, is not realizing how big of a deal he is. If Miami was to trade LeBron James to Cleveland for say Varejao and Dion Waiters and somebody else, do you think the fans would be pissed at LeBron, or would they be lashing out at Miami? I think he's missing the point here. It's not that players get more blame than franchises get. I think it's just a matter of what it's comes back in the deal. If LeBron James wasn't such a superstar type of a player and he walked, people would not be nearly as outraged as they were. And at the same time, if he was not much of if he was an average player and Miami traded him, nobody would probably would care down there. But if Miami were to trade him before he walked away, the outrage would be there, and maybe even more so towards the Miami Heat, not towards LeBron James. So I feel like he's sort of missing the point when he's thinking about this thing and maybe being a little too sensitive about the whole issue. What do you think, Calvin?
No, I can sort of empathize with the player who feels frustrated with a fan base for not ever giving them the benefit of the doubt, because really all these guys are, you know, we take sports so seriously, but for these guys, you know, it's like if you worked for Apple and Microsoft wanted to hire you. You know, someone could say, yeah, you're being disloyal to Apple by, you know, switching, by wanting to work over at Microsoft. But everybody does that all the time in their lives. You know, to them, it's a job. I know we take it so seriously, but it's nice to want to win championships. And, yeah, they all want the glory, you know, connected to that. But ultimately, it's about where you work, and it's about, you know, the respect that you feel with any employee. There's a million reasons why, if you're working for a company, you might no longer want to work for that company. And only in the world of sports, there's a couple other worlds, but mostly in the world of sports, that's where you have, you know, millions of people scrutinizing your every decision respect. So
I think that's,
you said
because
a minute ago, if LeBron was an average player and the team decided to trade him, nobody would care. Nobody cares about you. People only care about the team. So like, why should LeBron or anyone care about what the fans think of him? You know what I mean? The fans don't have your best interest at heart unless you're somebody who could do something for them.
But there you go.
Right.
There you go. He does care.
But why should he? Because the fan, another thing that the fans do is that they feel entitled because they're paying all this money and they're going to and they take it out on the players because the players are the ones that are actually putting the product out that on the floor that you're going to watch. They'll take it out on officials too. Look at Mike Munger. Yeah, I mean, he takes it on officials every night. So you pick your spots as to where you're going to send your ire if you feel entitled because you've been shelling out all this cash. I mean, I would prefer to just go and watch the game and criticize people. I'm not going to get angry. I wouldn't have gotten mad if Rondo had decided to walk away from Boston and sign with the Lakers or the Knicks or whoever it may be. That's his decision. So, but I see like why LeBron is asking the question. I just feel like he should know better than that as the best player in the NBA for the last 10 years. He should know this already. He should have figured it out.
But that's exactly the thing. I think he doesn't understand, though, because he's saying, why don't I get more empathy as a player? But people aren't looking at it that way. They're looking at it from the standpoint of what their franchise is getting or not getting. I sometimes think about, you know, what if the NBA broke up and you just have all the NBA players out there and we just repick teams and franchises and players, and there's no Celtics and there's no Lakers. It would be really difficult for me as a fan, even though I'm a basketball fan. I'm much more a Celtics fan than I am an NBA fan or a Rondo fan or anything like that. So I think sometimes a player like LeBron misunderstands the value of the franchise and the interest in that over the interest in the player itself.
Well, I think that's a great point, Sam. I think you'd lose a lot of fans because there are people that really are loyal to the team, but there would still be that hardcore fan base that would flock to some of the better players in the league. But if there was a team that consisted of Kevin Love, Jimmy Butler, and let me take a Celtic here, Marcus Smart, I would watch that team if they were X team in Montana from Canada. Well, I don't know. I don't care where they're from. I would watch that team because I do tend to be drawn in by certain players.
But you hit the nail on the head too. Of course, they're always going to blame the players because you can get mad at this. You can get mad at Danny Ainge for doing a stupid move. You can get mad at Brad Stevens for coaching the team poorly. But you're never going to turn. I mean, you can turn on those guys, but you're never going to turn on the Celtics and just walk away if they make a million dumb decisions in a row. We could the 90 Celtics. How many stupid decisions did they make? Nobody. You don't just stop being a fan. Maybe you say, okay, I'm going to wait till they get a new GM or I'm going to wait till they get a new coach. But you're not. You never say, unless you're a bad fan. You never just say, okay, I'm going to be an Orlando Magic fan now. That goes against the nature of being a fan. So, it's unfortunate. You know, that's why guys like LeBron or individual players, you shouldn't just try not to worry about what fans think, because fans ultimately are going to be on the side of the teams.
Yep, I agree. So I wanted to hear you guys' comments on that. So I appreciate you guys taking my call. Checking in. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I want your thoughts on this one other thing. I haven't brought it up with Rui yet, but I was going to. There's been some debate in, you know, the Celtics community over whether or not Rondo should have his number retired at the end of his career, and I wanted your quick thoughts on that before you go.
No, I don't think his number should be retired. And I'm as big of a Rondo fan as anybody. If he'd have played a couple more years, or even if they had won that title in 2010, if they'd won that title, I would say for sure. But it feels like he's a little bit short to me of having his number retired. And I know there's players like Maxwell that have been up there, and I think Ainge will be up there eventually. But I don't know. For me, there's something that's missing when it comes to Rondo, and I can't quite pinpoint it. But he's definitely short of that, as is Ray Allen, also. So.
I completely agree with you, Sam, but I dread the fact that they may both be retired at some point, and we'll get into that in just a second. We appreciate the call, man. Love hearing from you, as always.
Thanks, guys. I'll be checking in every Tuesday, so can't wait to hear from you guys whenever you're
excellent,
back on.
Excellent, Sam. We'll do our best to keep things going live here so we can take your call, and because definitely one of our favorite callers on the show. So we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks a lot, guys. Go Celtics.
There he goes. All right, Calvin. Before we get into a little bit of the retired number discussion, I want to tell some people about something. Is that okay with you?
Oh, that's fine with me.
So let me ask you a question then. Have you ever felt the need to be shown how to do something on online or in Excel or with Photoshop or anything like that?
Well, if anyone knows anything about me, they know that I'm basically functionally illiterate. So
exactly.
Yes, sometimes I need people to translate English to me or translate Excel into
whatever it may be. Well, here's the brand new thing that we are excited about here at CLNS Radio. It's lynda.com, and that's lynda.com. And basically, Calvin, I'm telling you because I know that you are like me as well. Sometimes technology is just over my head, and lynda.com seems to be the place to go to get all of your tutorials, all your courses that you need to learn any of this new technology stuff. All right. So luckily you can get a free 10-day trial to lynda.com if you go to, where's the thing? Where'd it go? CLNS Radio. No, it's a Beats and Eats thing. That's why I screwed that up. It's lynda.com/beatsandeats. So go check that out because you can get tutorials on how to use tablets, iPhones, Androids, anything like that. A lot of Excel and Microsoft stuff like that too. No promo code, but okay. I hope that live read went well and didn't bore the hell out of you. So now to answer the retirement of the numbers question, because that's what everybody was waiting for. And I agree with Sam. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
And Ray. Yes, I agree with Sam. Tired, but a close friend of mine who, by the way, predicts LeBron James and Rajon Rondo to be Los Angeles Lakers next year, also says that a couple years after KG and Pierce's numbers go up, because he's convinced KG's number is going up too, Rondo's number and Ray Allen's number will go up on a lowly night when the Celtics are still crappy in 10, 12, 20 years or whatever it is. He thinks that those guys are going to get their numbers retired, and I feel like that will be a shame because I don't think that they were here long enough, first of all, and I would debate that KG should not get his number retired either, but I understand the argument for why you would think he should, because he changed the culture of this team again and he brought it to a championship. I think that was the biggest thing that he could have done for an entire franchise. Rondo, on the other hand, was the benefit of that and a couple of other superstar type of players on his team that he fit well with, and he got along with all these guys, but when things went sour, he went sour too. And he went south, and that's where I feel like he's not a get-your-number-retired type of player for the Boston Celtics. Not only that, but he's probably going to play in the league another 10 years. How can you get your number retired in a place
10 years.
That – yeah, why not?
Is he gonna develop an awesome jump shot in the next 3 years?
I mean, he's not
– he's going to play until he's 40?
Sure. He might. Some of these guys are gonna. I mean, listen. That's an overshot. That's still an overshot. But why? So, but still, you play for a place for 9 years, and you're not an overwhelming type of player. Was there ever a point where he was clear cut the best player on the court night in and night out? I don't know if you can say that about him. The past year and a half, there were nights where Jeff Green was far and away better than him, and maybe that's because it was mentally checked out, but that's part of it.
Right. Last year he was hurt all year, so post Pierce KG trade, you can't really make that argument. I mean, I guess maybe for this half season, before maybe you might be able to make that argument in 2010. Certainly in the playoffs, obviously you could. I'm not 2010, 2011, and. Maybe I don't think you can make that argument in 2010 because, I didn't think he was that good in the finals against the Lakers. My thing is longevity shouldn't put your number in up in the rafters. You know that I'm really conservative about putting numbers up in the rafters anyway. I'm gonna have to call you back. My phone's dying. Give me one second.
Sounds good. So you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna think on my feet. And I'm going to ask Liz Ferrola what she thinks about this. Liz, you are going to join us for a segment in a few minutes, but now you're going to have to tell me whether you think that these guys should get their numbers retired or not. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hey. I'm glad that I was right next to my phone when that happened.
Yep. And now you've been warned. That's what I tried to stretch out that action as much as possible.
Well, thanks. So wait, what's the question about retiring?
Rondo and Ray Allen. What do you think about getting their numbers retired
as
for the Celtics?
I mean, I feel like I always think it's weird when numbers are retired for players who don't finish their career in a city, like especially if he's just like somewhere else for a couple of years and most of his career is here, and that's where like he really put up a lot of numbers. So speaking about Rondo, I suppose it goes for Ray Allen too. Then that's one thing, but I don't know. I just think it's weird when players have their numbers retired for teams that they don't finish.
All right, and now that Calvin
Now that
Calvin is back, he's going to speak to longevity because I think that's kind of what you're talking about there, Liz. And we'll talk to you in a few minutes. Thanks.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, so he did play with the team for 8.5 seasons. But again, you know, like you said, he was the best player on the team for arguably a season or two max, right? He was inarguably the fourth best player on the title team. So if you're going to hang his jersey up in the Raptors for being on the title team, then you have to hang all the other jerseys up too. I've heard an argument that he's fourth all time on the Celtics in assists, and that should put him. But if that's the case, okay, he's fourth all time in assists. How many teams have four past first point guards on their teams who have played 9 years on the team? It sounds impressive in a vacuum when you say fourth all time for the Celtics in assists. But really, you know, it's not that impressive considering, I mean, it's impressive, you know, based on longevity, but it's not that impressive a stat because it's like assists aren't what make the NBA go. So just by his style of player, he's going to be near the top of any team's assist list if he plays on that team for a significant period of time.
I'm trying to. Oh, that's not an easy thing to Google. What's going on? I'm trying to find out who the top four players are for the Utah Jazz in assists. And my point was going to be that I believe Deron Williams is going to be in the top four of that team of that list. And I want to find it. But would Utah Jazz fans feel like that they should put Deron Williams in the rafters and retire his number? What do you think about that?
That's a great point. I don't think he should be up in the Raptors. Again, like I was saying, I'm really conservative. Like, as a Laker fan, I'm going to be furious if Derek Fisher gets his jersey put up in the Raptors.
There you go.
Right, yeah. Derek Fisher was never even an average player in his career. I don't even want Kyle Gasol's
boom.
Number.
I nailed it.
Titles. Yeah.
I nailed it. Deron Williams. Deron Williams, number four on all time in the Utah Jazz in assists. It goes Stockton, Malone, Ricky Green, and with 4,003 assists, Deron Williams. And then their list dips way down to just under 2,000 is Andre Kirilenko. So I would argue that Kirilenko on the Jazz is a better player to get his number retired than Deron Williams. But there's your comparison. Obviously, Utah Jazz, not as storied a franchise as the Boston Celtics. But if we're talking about assists and that's going to be your criteria, wouldn't the Jazz be one of the first teams you look at with John Stockton leading the way?
I like that Malone is number two all time. I mean, it's just Jazz. That just goes to show, like, that's what's going to happen when you look at assist list. I don't know what the Lakers list looks like. It probably looks like Magic Johnson, you know, Kobe, Jerry West, and then who the hell knows?
Let's find out. Let's find out. I'm looking at it right now. Magic Johnson, Jerry West, Kobe Bryant. All right, let's see if you even know who this guy is. I'll tell you that number five is Michael Cooper. Number six is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Number seven is Elgin Baylor. Number eight is Gail Goodrich. Number nine is James Worthy. Number 10 is Nick Van Exel. So number four with 3,846 assists for the Lakers is a man that I've never even heard of, Calvin. Do you know who it is?
I don't have to guess. Is it Sadale 3?
Nope, I've heard of him, actually. He played for the Lakers from 1977 through 1983. His name is Norm Nixon.
Okay, Norm Nixon was good.
He was good? Is his number retired?
No, because the Lakers only have, like, this is the point that I made to you before. The Lakers only have, like, six numbers retired.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are now
Shaq's retired. Yeah.
Now that Shaq's retired, Shaq, by the way, way down the total rebounds list, Kobe Bryant is starting to just smash him in rebounds for totals. So if you're going to look at these total lists, and that's going to be your argument, people, we've ranted on this for 5 minutes now. If that's your argument for putting a guy's number up in the rafters because he's fourth all time on the assist list, then I'm with Sam and I'm with Calvin. Throw the Ross the jersey on somebody else. Give him the number. Don't care.
Don't retire Katie's number either. Yeah, I said it. But I understand. Yeah. I understand that you.
I understand KG. I don't really understand Ray or Rondo.
KG had like four good seasons in Boston. You know, let's be honest.
And he was dedicated to the team. He spoke about being a Celtic, and he changed the attitude in the locker room, and he was a leader on the court and off the court, and the list goes on. Those things were not things that you could say about Rajon Rondo, even when it was quote unquote his team. He was not the leader that KG was. He was not the locker room presence. He was not the just game changing type of player as far as attitude and mood is concerned. So I feel like it takes away from whatever accolades you want to throw at him. And boost KG up. And besides, I'm rusty. We've really beat this thing into the ground. So I'll just play this.
Y'all been in the ball fight.
There you go. That's right, Rondo. I don't have any clips like of Rondo saying stuff like that. Do I? Don't retire his number. All right.
Any Rondo clips?
No, I don't think so. Let's see.
Has Rondo ever said
anything? Oh, I forgot I have this
Rondo!
One. This
is not...
Thank you, Chris Webber. And if there are any dogs or animals nearby, I apologize. we've got to talk a little bit more about the NBA here quickly. After 45 minutes of Rondo talk, that was supposed to be like a 15-minute segment. Anyway, this trade that went down has the NBA all everybody's going crazy because they think it's such a big deal. Look at this. J.R. Smith, the Knicks are blowing it up. Phil Jackson is wheeling and dealing. He has no fear. He's just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to trade these guys. Just dump cucks. Open up the salary cap for the Knicks. J.R. Smith goes to Cleveland. And Oklahoma City gets Deion Waiters. Where did Shumpert go? Cleveland, right?
Yeah.
Does this deal even matter? Does this deal matter? Does J.R. Smith and Shumpert do J.R. Smith and Shumpert make Cleveland better? Are they really going to change the game that much? I mean, maybe, but I feel like this is just a nothing deal for everyone. I'm not even sure if Deion Waiters is going to catch on in Oklahoma City. I just don't buy it.
I think, I need to talk about the Knicks because they're hilarious, but...
I love that the Knicks are so bad. I'll bet the Knicks all for another 45 minutes. That'll end the show.
I'll get to the Knicks in a minute. But I do like this trade for OKC because what do they trade to get Deion Waiters? They don't have any scoring on their bench other than Reggie Jackson. I understand that, you know, they play a similar style, but Deion Waiters can score. Like, plus Deion Waiters is 23. Like, what do you, you know what I mean? Like, I know Deion Waiters.
Oh, yeah, it's not a bad thing to get Deion Waiters. I just don't think it improves them that much. That's all.
If you could trade Jay Crowder and pick up Deion Waiters, wouldn't you do it?
Sure.
I know she's going to be like, I like Jay Crowder, but whatever. That's not even the point.
I like Jay Crowder doing everything but shooting the basketball. I cringe every time that man shoots the ball.
That's fine. Yeah. I'm just saying, you saw who they traded, right? Alex Kirk, Lewis Amundsen, who I didn't even know was still in the NBA. And Lance Thomas, who I think is a WWE wrestler, you know what I mean? So they traded away nothing for Deion Waiters. they have a protected first round pick, which, you know, the fender of the fender. But they didn't even send that to the Knicks, they sent it to the Cavs. So the Cavs, yeah, are they stuck with J.R. Smith? Sure, but they also got Shumpert. So who, you know, might help for them? I you're right. I don't think it'll be an impactful trade for the Cavaliers, who, you know, I think they're in trouble, but we can get to that on another show if you want.
Yeah, they are in trouble. But let's focus on bashing the Knicks because, wow, are they just a pathetic puddle of nothing.
Well, here's what's stink. Awesome. I don't know if you followed, like, the story as it was breaking. I'm sure you didn't. But, like... So,
no, I was at the game.
Oh, you were at the game, yeah. So basically, like, as reports first came out, it was that J.R. Smith was traded for Deion Waiters. That was, like, the first report that had come out. So it was like Knicks, you know what I mean? It was like Knicks fans were like, oh, Deion Waiters, like, finally we got something going on this team. And then, the report was that the Knicks were getting, they weren't getting Deion Waiters, but they were getting a first round pick back in the deal. Okay? Then the report came that it was a three-way deal and that the Knicks were getting Reggie Jackson. And everyone was like, how Reggie Jackson?
That's not bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you got a point guard now. Great.
Right. Then it turned out that Iman Shumpert was also included in the deal. And they're like, okay, well, we're getting, you know, they like Iman Shumpert for some weird reason, but I don't really like Iman Shumpert, but they're like, okay, whatever, we're getting Reggie Jackson.
Except, so it was basically like the Knicks fans were like, oh, we got rid of J.R. Smith and we're getting something good. We're gonna get something good. And then Phil Jackson said,
That's exactly what happened. And then finally it was like, okay, the Knicks are getting a second round of pick out of this deal and a bunch of garbage. So Knicks fans were mad. And then when the deal was finalized, it turns out that they're getting a 2019 second-round pick. 2019! Is Earth going to exist in 2019, right? Do we know? Phil Jackson's going to be dead by then, right? Probably. Let's be honest. 2019 waiting for a second-round pick. You don't even get a first-round pick in 2019. You get an exciting second-round pick. So I'm just looking at, like, trade analysis of this, and they're like, you know, there's so much spin in favor of the Knicks. Like, oh, the Knicks are getting cap relief. Like, they got what they wanted out of this. They traded Shumpert, who supposedly the OKC Thunder offered a first-round pick straight up for them a month ago. The Knicks refused. People wanted Iman Shumpert. They could have traded it, yeah. So they could have had a first-round pick a month ago. Now, a month later, they're tossing him off for a 2019 second-round pick. And, you know, okay, they tossed J.R. Smith away also. They cleared some cap space in this offseason. Great. The Knicks were already going to have, like, $35 million in cap space in this offseason. Who's going to the Knicks next year? You know what I mean?
Maybe they need to fire Derek Fisher and hire a guy like, oh, I don't know, Rex Ryan. That's right. They could just all eat snacks, and they could have terrible basketball games in Madison Square Garden, and they can be the worst team in the league, and they can hopefully set a record for least amount of wins in NBA history, breaking the 76ers record from last year. Is that from last year? I would just love to see that. The Knicks are just pathetic, and their fans are the worst fans that I've ever encountered in my entire life. I've been to Philadelphia Phillies games. I've been to Sixers games. I've been in I was going to say in Jacksonville. That's not bad. I'm sure people out in Oakland are just ridiculous. In the Pacers fans that I encountered were very nice when I ran into them. Colts fans were awful, but not as bad as Knicks fans, man. Yankees fans are bad, not as bad as Knicks fans. I can't stand Knicks fans more than any fan base in the entire world. So to see them suffering like this, it puts a smile on my face.
All right, but before we switch subjects, real quick, I just want to comment. I was ahead of the curve on this, Murray. I was saying when the Lakers were in the finals, 2009, 2010, I was saying it in 2003, 2001, all right? The triangle offense sucks. It's a terrible offense. And now I'm glad that everyone's coming around. It's contrary to all the NBA analytics, you know, like analytics are all the rage now in the NBA and like the triangle offense, like it goes completely against analytics, but also like it goes against common sense. It's a terrible offense. There's the reason why it's never worked when it wasn't being run by Kobe or Michael Jordan. Nobody's ever successfully run a triangle offense.
Right, you need the player. You need the player to fit into the offense. By the
way, they didn't even run the triangle. You know what I mean? Like neither one of those, like both of those guys. The reason those offenses worked is because they like turned it into isolation offenses when they needed to score. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
So
like,
somewhat isolation, and but they also got out on the break quite a bit. They weren't. It's not like they were a team that was just this get into the half court, set up the triangle. That's what I've seen from the Knicks. Sort of this season, yeah. They don't run as much as they used to. Kobe and Jordan were and Kobe still tries. They tried to get out on the break. They did get out on the break. They got fast break layups as well. They controlled pace of the game. And when they wanted a half court set, they used the triangle. So I mean, the type of player that can just dominate and shoot over zone defenses and just pretty much be the guy that Kobe and Michael are,
you know,
and the Knicks don't have that guy.
You know how often Shaq actually played the high post? Shaq never played the high post. They didn't run the triangle. It's just a lie. It's a lie. The triangle sucks. That's the point. Triangle always sucked. It was never a good offense. That's all.
The triangle always sucked. You know what doesn't suck?
It did. What's that?
The Garden Report does not suck. The Garden Report, it doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Jared Weiss does a great job with the Garden Report. He puts it on our YouTube channel every home game, youtube.com/CLNSradio. And he will be doing another one. He just did one for the after the Hornets game last night. And, of course, since he's on after every home game, he won't be doing one until next week. But the Pelicans are in town on Monday, so check that thing out. Monday night or Tuesday morning, whenever he gets that it posted, he's in the locker room and he calls into the post game show, and you know all about the Garden Report. Go check it out. Do we want to talk about Major League Baseball quickly?
Yeah,
because there's been a lot of controversy as far as who people are voting for and their reasoning behind it and what the ballot and how many players you can vote for. Buster Olney was all angry on ESPN and blah, blah, blah. Personally, I think the whole thing is a load of crap, and it's an antiquated system, much like the game of baseball in general, and they need to do some sweeping changes to this entire thing or they're going to lose people faster than they think.
Well, it's just fascinating to me. Who got in this year? Three power pitchers and a guy who didn't hit for power at all. You know what I mean? Like, how do I know? The whole notion, like, that hitters are subjected to scrutiny that pitchers aren't subjected to at all. I don't understand the hypocrisy. But if you're gonna point out Roger Clemens, like, they think Roger Clemens is the only pitcher connected to steroids. You know what I mean? Other than that, it's entirely hitters. It's just because the numbers favor hitting, but steroids wasn't the only reason for that. You know, smaller ballparks, juice balls. Like, there's a million things that you could point to. You can point to, like, not developing pitchers the same way. Like, just because hitters were on steroids doesn't mean pitchers weren't on steroids. Like, I like Randy Johnson, but, like, the guy threw, 140 miles an hour. Like, why does he escape scrutiny? I don't get it. And, Mike Piazza, basically, he's clearly the greatest hitting catcher of all time. Like, why is he not in the Hall of Fame? Why?
Because the Hall of Fame is the voting system is a lot about politics. It's a lot about guys in the BWAA trying to draw attention to themselves and make points And I'm going to vote for Larry Walker instead of Pedro Martinez because I think he deserves to get in. Or I'm not going to vote for anybody because I should be able to vote for more than 10 people. The criteria between looking at guys and saying they're a steroid guy or they're not a steroid guy, I don't know. I believe in the notion that if the player sort of was bigger than the game at times, like Mark McGwire should be a Hall of Famer. Sammy Sosa, the two of those guys took over the game of baseball. They took over just the spotlight from anybody else. Both of those guys, I believe, should be Hall of Famers, and it's because of their stardom and not because of how they got their stardom. You know, whether you're guilty of taking steroids or not, if you played in that era, your image is going to be tainted unless you can prove that you did not take steroids. And none of these guys can do that, right? There's not any proof at this point that provide this steroid era was clean, right? Is that unless they give all the back for their drug tests, but even then people would put.
Right. It's impossible to prove a negative. But I don't even want, like, that's a big picture argument, really, that, like, we don't have time for tonight, and I would like to have it another week, but I don't get, I like John Smoltz, but John Smoltz is the third best pitcher that is going into the Hall of Fame this year. Mike Piazza, again, greatest hitting catcher of all time, why is he not in the Hall of Fame? He's never been accused of any steroid thing. Is it just a notion that, like, he might have been on steroids? Is that that's what we're coming to now?
Craig Biggio, not that dominant of a hitter. 3,000 hits, sure. He played the game for a long time. Were you ever nervous when Craig Biggio came to the plate? Did teams pitch around Craig Biggio often? No. They did that with Mike Piazza. So I would go with Piazza before Biggio. I like a more well-rounded player. So I don't know. I would make the argument against Piazza because he was a liability on defense. And sure, he could hit, but I feel like a lot of guys can just rake. And if he was playing for an American League team, he would be the DH, and there would be a different story behind him as far as you wouldn't be able to call him the best hitting DH of all time. You can call him the best hitting catcher of all time you think so? I don't know about that. Because most catchers, I'd have to look at numbers to make that argument, but I would say that David Ortiz or Edgar Martinez are right up there. And if Piazza was a DH, then I would argue against that as well.
But you're also not taking into account the grind that catching takes to your body. That's the reason why you don't.
Oh, of course.
That's why we don't have superstar catchers. That's why Joe Mauer is also so valuable. You know what I mean? Like, catchers who are awesome on offense are like an invaluable resource. The guy played catcher for 90% of his career, and he was an awesome hitter. You know what I mean? You might not. Maybe you don't think he's the greatest overall catcher of all time because of his defense. That's arguable. But putting him in the Hall of Fame, like, how many catchers are in the Hall of Fame now? You know what I mean? He's better than. Let me put it to you this way: there's no catcher who's not in the Hall of Fame who's not better than Mike Piazza, or who is better than Mike Piazza, rather.
Get that list. And what are we talking here? Fisk. Right, Fisk, Campanella, Johnny Bench. Yeah, you've been cutting out too. I wonder if we're starting to lose it here.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you can bet Johnny Bench. That's all you got, right? What else you got for me?
No, I'm saying no. I said Carlton Fisk, Johnny Bench.
Oh, Fisk, yeah.
Yeah.
Not even you, right?
Campanella, Roy Campanella, Buck Ewing.
Yeah, it's better than Campanella.
All these older guys, Gary Carter.
My dad went to high school with Gary Carter, and so I'm biased towards him, but he wasn't. You're cutting out again.
All right, let's. Yeah, I don't know whether it's you or me. We're just going to move on. Which means that it's time for some crazy topics. Let's find out what we're talking about tonight. Liz Ferrola is back again.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey. Rory, you keep cutting out. I don't know.
Yep.
What?
Oh,
what
talk to Calvin.
Okay, great. Hey, Calvin.
Hey.
All right, so I'm a little disappointed that there's no intro music, but I'll do without the Goo Goo Dolls for a week. That would be nice. So I have two stories. You know, I like to find, like, crazy news stories from wherever. And I was
and
about
I don't
the,
want the world to see me, because I don't think that they'd understand.
Oh, terrible.
Sorry, get back to what you were saying.
I like how we can't hear Rory talk, but thankfully he still has access to the
I hope you enjoyed that. You asked for it.
I did kind of ask for that. All right, so the first thing that I was reading about that I thought was hilarious is that there was this huge internet shortage in Vietnam. There's like these five huge like hubs that go into the country, and one of them was completely chopped by a shark because it runs underwater, and the shark just like chomped right through it, and then the internet was out for like 20 days. What do you think about that?
Really?
I just love the fact that a shark cut out the internet for 20 days to like almost an entire country.
Yeah, I think they should probably hire better internet technicians.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like the only way that it's like fed into the country. They have these like five giant pipes underwater, but they have like video of the shark. Does they have video on the pipes? I guess, but they just have video of the sharks just like going through
it. Well, what they should have done to solve the problem is go to lynda.com. L-Y-N-D-A, but the problem is they couldn't do that because their internet stopped.
Your segues are almost as smooth as Rory's segues, by the way. That's great. Possibly the best headline write-up for it, though, is it says sharks are taking a bite out of one of the largest cable internet infrastructures in the world, and bite was spelled B-Y-T-E. That was the best. Okay. All right. Second thing, were we still gone?
Yeah. Yes, continue to talk.
Okay, second thing, I think you might actually...
Oh, I said one word.
Oh, there you are. Oh, hey. I think this next story is, like, just crazy silly, but so Kanye released a new song featuring Paul McCartney, and everybody was up in arms because there were a ton of people on Twitter who had no idea who Paul McCartney was. And they were, like, commenting on, like, for example, here's a tweet. Kanye has a great ear for talent. This Paul McCartney guy is going to be huge. There's one tweet. Another one, one is, I don't know who Paul McCartney is, but Kanye is going to give this man a career with his new song. And a lot of people just saying, who is Paul McCartney? Lots of question marks. This is why I love Kanye, for shining light on unknown artists. So what do you think about that?
I like Kanye better than Paul McCartney, certainly.
Right, but isn't it, I mean, like, I'm not the biggest Beatles fan, but isn't it kind of ridiculous that people don't know who Paul McCartney is?
Would you know who Huckleberry Jones was? You know?
Well, Huckleberry Jones is
nope,
not a
never
real
heard person. Of him. Not a real person. Liz, are you sure?
You don't even know. You sure?
What I'm saying is the Beatles are one of the biggest bands of all time, right? Like,
Right, but,
terms of, like,
but they were
records.
One of the biggest fans of, they were the biggest fan of all time, but at a certain point, like, all old things become, you know, like, Clark Gable was one of the, he was, like, one of the biggest actors of all time, but, like, who the hell knows anything about Clark Gable? You know what I mean? Right, you know,
yeah.
You got a lot of Gable facts?
But here's the thing, are we, like, are we really at that point in, like, I mean, we're not that old, I feel like.
Jackson was the fourth leading assist.
What do you know about Gable? That's all I'm saying. What do you got on
this
Gable?
This is the most frustrating segment. You're barely responding to me, and Marie just keeps coming in with, like, two-word snippets. This is the best.
I'm barely responding to you? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm responding.
Well, I just think it's ridiculous, this whole thing with Paul McCartney. I do.
Well, maybe you should have done something in the last 30 years, McCartney. What did I say? Off of the USA.
Well, he has done stuff. Like, he's released albums recently.
I'm sorry.
Wait, who doesn't know Paul McCartney, Liz?
I missed something good.
Who doesn't know Paul McCartney?
People on Twitter
who
like Kanye.
Oh,
like, oh, there are so many Paul people. Is, like, as soon as the song came out, there were so many people being like, who's Paul McCartney? Who is this guy that, like, Kanye's discovered? Blah, blah, blah. It feels crazy to me that Kanye is bigger than Paul McCartney to a large population of people. That's all.
Well, that's the kids these days, Liz.
I guess that's true. All right, well,
Kanye Kardashian.
Another stellar showing from me.
Another lively rendition of.
And I don't want the world to see me, because I don't think that they don't.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks, guys. Later.
Thanks, Liz.
Last chance to look at me, Hector.
Yeah, that was delayed. Okay, Alvin, do you want to Dallas Cowboys segment, or do you want to end this thing?
Yeah, you're pretty choppy and rough, Rory, so I guess we can call it a wrap.
And good night, ladies and gentlemen. There we go.
That's it. Good night, everyone.
So you want to say, I guess we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully, a little better than it just. Good night, Calvin.
Yeah, whatever he said. Good night, everyone.